everybody. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Let's begin by remembering, given what we're about to talk about here in Baltimore, that 2 years ago today, Michael Brown died at the hands of Darren Wilson in Ferguson when he was shot. That has led to so much in this country, an unfolding of this kind of police issues and police killings in America, and brought this to the public's attention in ways that has not been seen, I think. Even though things have happened over the years, now it's become very visual. And so we remember today, this is the day that Michael Brown was killed. And one of those things occurred recently again in Baltimore with Corinne Gaines, who was shot in her apartment. She was armed and surrounded by police. It's a very complex issue, though. We'll cover some of that today in your thoughts. There have been rallies in Baltimore that one of our guests has covered. We will be looking at the issue that the Sun has been covering of internal investigations with police in Baltimore City as well, and what that calls for us to think about in terms of reform. And this continuing Port Covington, which is going to be – the vote has been delayed, which I think is positive for us to be able to wrestle with this in a deeper way and understand what's going on in those issues. And then there's also the $15 minimum wage will be voted on next Monday in the city council, which has been opposed by the present city council, Jack Young. So join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner and go over to our Facebook pages. But do join us at 410-319-8888. So in the studio with me now to take your calls and to think all this stuff through are our guests. Lisa Snowden-McCray joins us, writer and associate editor at the City Paper. Good to have you with us, Lisa, once again.
Thank you.
And back is Luke Broadwater, reporter at the Baltimore Sun, where he covers City Hall, local politics, and just wrote a really interesting article on lead paint, which we'll be talking about tomorrow in more depth, and how people may not be getting the money that they deserve from these lawsuits. Good to have you back in the studio.
Good morning.
In the house is Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, who won the Democratic nomination for Baltimore's 9th Councilmatic District, which is currently represented by Pete Welsh. And we are going to bring in you a series of candidates here on our roundtable so you can hear what they think about the world as they run to become a member of City Council. Good to have you with us, John.
Oh, it's great to be here.
410-319-8888. So you've been covering the Corinne Gaines, I think, with some intensity.
Yes.
So it's a real complex thing. I mean, it seems to me there's layers here. I mean, you have this young woman who comes from clearly a very political family with a political consciousness and that's wrapped up in this. There's the question of her being poisoned by lead as a child and how that affected her cognitive and behavioral abilities. There's this question of how the Baltimore County Police handled this. Could they have done something other than shot her, even though she had a gun, given that they would not let her mother and a cousin come in and speak, who are both psychiatric workers?
Mm-hmm.
So talk a bit about what we're missing here.
Well, it is a complex issue. We actually just wrapped up putting together this week's paper yesterday, and we have a piece that kind of, because it's so complex, there's three writers on it. There's me, Ed Erickson, and Brandon Soderberg. Brandon actually went to the vigil that was held at City College on Friday, where Corinne's family spoke and said a lot of things that you just said. You know, her dad said, you know, my daughter drank lead. My daughter had lead poison in the water that she ingested. And her cousin spoke, who said that he was a mental health expert who asked to speak with Corinne and was not allowed to. Ed talked to some former police officers who had their own questions about the way that it was handled. One gentleman in specific said that he felt it was rushed, you know, as an outside observer. And I talked a little bit about just the facts that they came in and there were children in the house. And I found a study that the ACLU did back in 2014 looking at kind of the militarization of police and how often that seems to happen, you know, when there are children or elderly in the house. And these incidents can be very violent. You know, police can be throwing flash bombs or banging on the door, and that's traumatic for a child. So, and that's not even, you know, we're writing it, and we're like, oh, wait. And then there's also the element of Facebook and social media, which I think we talked about a little bit last week when I was on, that kind of takes away this safety net that I think some black people have felt that they have, because that's how these cases have gotten the exposure that they've had through Facebook, through Twitter, through social media.
Right.
And if the police are able to kind of come in and manipulate that, then that, I think, can be concerning.
Look, I know this is not one of the beats you covered, but you've been following it. So.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a very interesting case in many ways. One, you have the police appear to be the aggressor in many ways, right? You have a relatively minor infraction that they go here to serve a warrant
what
for.
What was the infraction?
Wasn't she a failure to appear on a traffic violation?
Yes.
A failure to appear on a traffic violation.
Right. And so they kick in the door. They fire the first shot, right? And they shoot the kid, right? So that is not a good set of facts if you're the Baltimore County Police Department. Now, the people on the other side will say, hey, she was pointing a gun at them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that is that's a reasonable point of view to have on the other side. The thing is, though, when you have a 6-hour, 8-hour standoff, how did it – if there was no need to shoot for 6 or 8 hours, why was there a need to shoot at the end, and why did the police shoot first? So, and those are the questions I think a lot of people are wrestling with right now. You have in Corn Gaines someone who did allege lead poisoning. We know that's been an epidemic in Baltimore. About half of all lead poisoning cases in the state come from the city of Baltimore. There's been a lot of progress on that issue, but it's still affecting thousands of people. We know lead poisoning causes people to be more impulsive and more aggressive sometimes. And then she also holds these what I would call almost like libertarian type of views. This idea that you have the right to arm yourself against the government, and you don't need the government's permission to to drive a car or have a license plate displayed. And these are views that are commonly associated with like the West, with like cattle ranchers, and you see armed men taking over public lands out West, and those don't often end in their deaths. So there's the dichotomy there as well. She has this similar viewpoint and similar actions, but not necessarily the same outcome.
And the veteran who opened fire on the police officers in Dallas also held those views.
Yes.
Which I found interesting. Whether the same views that Bundy and his family held that took over the wildlife center in Oregon, who stood off the federal police when they over cattle grazing several years before that. I mean, John?
Right. Even to that
John
point,
Mullick.
You know, talking about this whole sovereign citizen movement, which is deeply problematic, whether we're talking about Clive and Bundy or anybody else, this idea that, and you think about the traffic stop, right, so the beginning of it is not having these things displayed, and then, so it's relatively minor, but there are so many things that make it such a bizarre and unique case. Because now you have, in the midst of this, you have a child who's inside, right? And so I think in terms of police accountability, I think there are some ways that you could de-escalate. There are some ways that you could actually negotiate. So there have been some recent examples around the country in Virginia and other places where there have been these standoffs. There's been negotiation, bringing in mental health experts and the like. One of the questions, though, on a deeper level is thinking about from the family who does have mental health experience and the like, and people recognize that she has some issues, some of those things might have been better addressed earlier on. And so now we get to this point where she has a child, she's exposing the child. I'm a father, and I think about exposing a young person to things like that and what that young person is going to take away from it, even to Luke's point about why the shot was necessary at the point. But then also, it's a relatively minor warrant. Except the warrant. You know, so there are so many pieces involved with that, but there's accountability. I think there's some de-escalation that could be necessary, and then some intervention both on the scene and prior to everything going down.
And I think we keep focusing on Baltimore City Police. We need to be focusing a little bit on the behavior in Baltimore County as well, which we do not do very much. There's not much coverage of Baltimore County like there is the city by the Sun or anybody else because, there's just not there.
There's a lot of attention always focused on the Baltimore City Police Department, and sometimes the Baltimore County Police Department doesn't face the same media scrutiny. You look at this case, they won't even release the officer's name. Would that be tolerated by the city police department? I doubt it. I mean, you saw
names
of the officers pretty early on in the Freddie Gray case and others here.
Yeah, no, and so, then speaking about Baltimore County, thinking about Chris Brown a few years ago, and then he wound up relatively minor situation, wound up dying at hands.
And other kids, people who weren't killed, people, the young man who was a young black man in Towson who was beaten up by the police, punched in the face. And when that took place, I mean, so it's not, you know, it goes on and on. Even Shorty, years back, for putting a toilet on the lawn, was arrested and kept in prison for months and months and months as a terrorist. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so at least what are your thoughts, what you just heard, before we open the phones here? I mean, what are we missing in this? What is it that people you think need to grapple with around this case?
I guess for me, there's two things I think about. I think that you were correct in saying that, you know, there's the issues that Corinne Gaines may have had with her family, or, you know, that her family maybe could have helped her through or whatever. But for me, she's an average citizen. The police are the police. They're paid. They're, you know, they're supposed to be they're the ones in this situation that are supposed to handle it correctly. Everybody else, you know, they should, but they're not on anyone's dime to do that. Another thing that I think is important is that whatever issues that she may or may not have had, at the root of it is a fear that a lot of Black people have of police. And I don't want that to get lost. And I think it's something that the police need to understand. I think it might be easy for them to say, oh, you know, she was crazy, whatever. But a lot of people have fear. They're not going to act the same way. Of course not. But that's a fear that I think police need to recognize and grapple with. I think because there's been so much scrutiny on Baltimore City Police Department, they've taken steps to start this process. But I don't think that we've heard anything from the Baltimore County Police that they've done the same. I asked them last week, it was, you know, are there any minority outreach? Has there been any changes to training? And the representative, whose name keeps escaping me, said, you know, we work to establish bonds in the community and kind of said stuff like that. But she couldn't give me concrete things like we've done this, we changed this. And I think that that's necessary in the county, just like it's been in the city.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions here. So let's open the phones on this one. 410-319-8888. Mark, on line one, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Good morning, Mark. You're on the air.
Yes.
Could you turn down your radio so we can hear you?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to turn it down so you don't get feedback. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's cool. Welcome.
Yeah. I don't know if I should give my name. I work in television, and I've been all over the world, and I've seen a lot of things. I'm Black. For what happened in Baltimore, I'm not sure. Maybe the police could have handled that a little different. I'm not with Black Lives Matter. I guess I would be considered more conservative. But, yes, I think that is very questionable about what happened in that case because a child was shot. And I've seen a lot of things. But I think it could have been handled differently.
How do you think they could have handled it differently?
Well, I mean, there are certain tactics you can use, concussion grenades, where you go to, I mean, robots. There are all kind of tactics that I'm familiar with. That's just the domestic setting. I mean, I've been in warfare where bombs were used and were needed, but in this case, I think it's questionable. And I wasn't there, so, I mean, it's almost like being a Monday morning quarterback, but it did go on for a certain amount of hours, and I think it possibly, tactically, could have been handled differently.
Okay.
A concussion grenade or gas, or there are other means to subdue plastic bullets. I'm familiar with these tactics, and that's why I say that.
Mark, appreciate the call.
One thing I've never, I guess, quite understood is why the police needed to force entry into the house to begin with. If you have a relatively minor warrant failure.
Yes, they're going after somebody who shot somebody or
failure
armed
to
robbery,
appear right. In court, why can't they just have left that on the doorstep? Second point, I guess, is when Lisa talks about fear, it's not like Corinne Gaines went to the police station, right? So she didn't interact with them. Her fear is heightened by the fact they come to her house, kick in her door. They're dressed the way they are. They've done certain things if she already had fear of the police, as many people do, to escalate and heighten that fear. So, I mean, those are the things as someone who's been reading the stories, not someone who's been reporting them, I'm looking at them and asking those questions myself.
And you add to that the questions that they didn't allow Rhonda Dormias, who is the mother, who's a psychiatric nurse, to step in and say, when she was trying to say, I can talk her down, they wouldn't let her do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was another question, why they wouldn't let her come in and help calm the situation down.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of coming back to Luke's point, they've said that they heard the two kids in the house, which, you know, kids are loud, so I'm sure they did. So, again, why don't you stop and kind of reconsider what your tactics are going to be when you hear there are two babies?
John Bullock on our way to the phones.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, on so many levels, there's so many questions, and then you have the the father and the other child, and there's so many moving parts, you know, with this piece. But I believe there has to be it's a no brainer. If you have somebody who's a mental health professional, who's related to the individual, who's willing to take part in it, that's something you want to take ownership of, rather than saying, hey, this is the way we're going to do it, and we're now going to be open to some other way, some alternative method.
Let me open the phones again. Then I want to really explore, looking at the Sun investigation, what does it mean to reform policing and how we police and what we do? What is that? How do we – what is that? I mean, we still have not – I've not heard a clear definition of what that means when we talk about reform. 410-319-8888. Ernest, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Ernest. You there?
Yes.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
We got you. We got you. Yes.
Okay. First of all, they need an independent investigation.
Yes.
Whatever the police said is alleged. We don't know if they heard the child in there, or we don't know if she pointed the gun first. It's alleged. Now, it's my understanding that the post office is the one that really worked the post. They usually get the failure to appeal warrants. The post office, he'll call somebody to meet him, and they go try to serve the warrant. And if usually, if nobody answers the door, it's a failure to appear. The officer said nobody answered the door, write a report. That's it. They don't go to see the superintendent of the building and to get a key to kick the door in and all that. But what they did, they went and got the key to kick the door in. She had a latch on the door. They kicked it in, and she had a shotgun. So they didn't go in then. They went out to the court commissioner, upgraded the warrant, assault on a police officer, assault by threat with a deadly weapon and all that. This gave them the opportunity to go in and kill her. They would be justified then. Now, they could have used several methods even then. When they went in the first time, they have a little gas grenade that would fit right in your pocket. All you got to do is toss it in there. People are coming out. They got the flashbang grenade. You throw that in there, that disorientates you. You don't know. Once they hit, you don't know where you are, and you could go in and make the arrest. But no, as a matter of fact, the SWAT team wasn't always there. They called the SWAT team.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when they call the SWAT team, they have a supervisor on the scene, the SWAT supervisor. They don't have the fact that the chief came out and spoke. He wasn't there. He doesn't know what happened. So the SWAT team supervisor should have been the one that's telling us what happened. But it was the reason why they, I think, they knew they was going to the scene. They should have had cameras on. You don't go to a scene where you know it's going to be problem. The reason why they didn't have cameras on, because they knew it was going to be problem. And this is my final point. If the officers that was involved in the first stop, where they got her with no tags and all that,
right?
If they went back to that location to serve that warrant, in my opinion, they intended to kill her.
What? Well, that's interesting, Ernest. I appreciate that. I'm not sure why. I mean, why would premeditatively want to kill her? I'm not sure what that would mean. But it was interesting that I appreciate your comments always as a former police officer, Ernest. And there was an interesting article that was just sent in.
That's the exact point I was making, and now there's an article written.
Right, that the sovereign law made Clive and Bundy a patriot, but Corinne Gaines is crazy.
Yeah, so I think, and you look at the handling of those situations, and you have to wonder if some guy is standing there, and if this is a ranch right out west, and the police come to serve a warrant, and he has a shotgun, and he answers the door with it pointed, do they say, we have a warrant for you, and then leave, or do they insist on coming back and kicking the door in? And go, I mean, so this, you just have to question the handling of it in comparison to other
right.
very similar minded situations.
So let me go back to the phones here, and then we'll come back to like two other two guests here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Kalik. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Her human rights and were definitely violated, and the escalation of the situation. This was no more than a traffic stop. You're asking how to reform the police? Well, you don't let them violate our human and constitutional rights. You start right there and say, okay, how can we do this? Number one, most traffic stops, just like the one in Minnesota with Philandor, the police didn't have to even engage them. All they have to do is call in whatever violation it is, and it's administrative. They send the car owner a ticket. Your equipment defective.
Right.
You got 30 days to fix it.
Right.
I mean, how does an administrative thing end up in police murder of a citizen? That the citizen ain't threatening nobody. There's nothing going on. Corinne did not threaten anybody. She is challenging reform in the system by you know, learning how to be a sovereign human being, which we actually all are, you know, if we take that mentality. We just go about protecting ourselves from people who would want to rule over us in a incorrect or unrighteous manner. We go about protecting ourselves from them so that we, you know, but Corinne is not wasn't no different than myself or anybody else. I'm not going to let somebody stomp on me, but I'm not going to give them fuel. It's just that she was immature in understanding how to protect her human, civil, and constitutional rights.
Kelly, I deeply appreciate the thought. I think that you raise a lot of important points. I mean, I think that the more you think about this, the fact that it was for a traffic violation, which is something that she could have gotten the summons in the mail saying you missed your court appearance, show up, or the police could have dropped off the summons at her door saying you're resummoning you to court, or whatever that was. It's a traffic violation. It's not like she stuck a gun on somebody or even shoplifted in a store or did any of those things. Mm. Didn't break a crime that would warrant police breaking in your door, it seemed to me, to start with.
Yeah, the unfortunate piece, though, is getting back to the sovereign citizen thing. Look, you know, I say this as a black man in America, as a political scientist, all those kinds of things. Look, we all have rights, but we also have responsibilities. You have a right, you have a duty to have insurance, to have registration, to have your license, to present those kinds of things. We know so many people in America have died just by doing some minor things, right? You look at Philando Castile. Here's somebody who at first the issue was, well, there was a busted taillight. There was no busted taillight. He fit the description of what he had a wide nose, right, like many of us have relatively wide noses, right? And so here's a person who has a registered firearm, tells the officer he has that. That's a different situation than what we have here. Right. So that the escalation from the immediate point of view happens, unfortunately from her. Now, how the police deal with it is also problematic. So once they get to the point and then you see and even the issue of social media. Right. So on some hands, we've seen people saying, look, this is what's happening to me in the police. But then when you look at some of the videos and even how she's interacting with her son, and it's a real problem. And I don't put it in the same category as the Philando Castile. At the same time, though, when it gets to now serving the warrant and getting to the house, that's where it could have been done a lot differently. But this is not just a regular traffic stop. It's very bizarre, and it goes into some other details. The other part, though, that also is getting lost, that they were there to serve two warrants. One was for the assault against, you know, the assault charge that her mate had from assaulting her. So then you have all these other moving parts that are there that, again, it's a family thing. It's a mental health thing. It's the whole sovereign citizen thing. It's a lack of de-escalation from the police. It's bad tactics. So it's just a whole cesspool of bad things happening.
So we have to take a short break. Come right back. And Lisa, you can jump in with your final comments on this one. And we'll also go to the phones. And Beverly, the next caller up, 410-319-8888 is the number here. Stay with us. Short break. And we come back to our conversation and our local roundtable. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Before we jump back into our program, I want to ask you a question. How would you like to close out the 88 days of summer in Curacao at the Curacao North Sea Jazz Festival? Want to give it a chance? Go to weaa.org for more information. You may be going there. I can't win it, but you can. Anyway, we're here with Lisa Snowden-McRae, who is writer and associate editor of the City Paper. Luke Broadwater, who is a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, where he covers the Baltimore City Hall and local politics. And Dr. John Bullock, who's a professor of political science at Towson University, who won the Democratic nomination for the Councilmatic 9th District, City Council District, where he's running. And we're bringing on a number of candidates on our roundtables so you can hear their thoughts and ideas as they pursue this. And before I go back to the phone to you, we're going to get to you, Beverly, and Sabor, Ross, Clarence. We're going to try to get to all of your calls here coming in. But how does this tie into what, for you all, to the Sun investigation about Baltimore City Police and the issues involved with the Internal Investigation Department? I mean, the statistics that came out of the piece that was done by Catherine Rentz, another good reporter. I mean, a lot of good reporters in the Sun doing a lot of good work. Let me just say that, or unearthing things.
I know everyone loves to bash the Sun, but we try.
No, look. The Sun is not what it once was. The Sun doesn't have enough reporters, but the men and women who work there are doing some really good work.
Thank you.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, not the work. We need more of that, but they need to invest more in our news so that can actually happen, right? But so I think that's really important. When it came out that the investigation, looking at 1,700 internal external complaints, that internal affairs took 8 months on average to complete a complaint. The Justice Department said it should take 90 days. Two-thirds of all the cases, internal affairs investigators concluded they didn't have enough evidence to rule one way or the other. In a smaller subset, 340 excessive force complaints, the rate climbs to three-fourths of all cases. 4% of excessive force complaints were upheld or sustained because an officer testified in those cases. And it left for two people had to leave, a few others were fired. And they were more likely to uphold complaints against any kind of officer if an officer was involved in the complaint. And 2,500 lower-level cases went back to the district level, and half were closed without any findings. Mm-hmm. So something's not right here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
What that story told me from reading it was that basically the only time anyone ever gets disciplined in internal affairs before a trial board is when another cop goes to the superiors about them. They only believe another police officer's word. If a citizen comes forward and says X, Y, and Z, they're rarely interviewed. They rarely go back and follow up. Their testimony is discounted. And basically the only time you can get another police officer in trouble is if another cop does it. And that's what we see in the Wesley Cagle case, right?
I'm about to raise that. Yeah. Go ahead.
And how that's different from the Freddie Gray case where the police refuse to testify against each other. But in Wesley Cagle, you have officers who do provide information that this was an unnecessary shooting. And you have the first conviction of a police officer in a shooting in Baltimore in decades. I've never even seen another one. So
I've not seen another one either. And he shot this young man on the ground. By the way, not that it's critical, but I think it's important. The man who was shot on the ground, not killed, was convicted of burglary. He's also white.
Sure.
And two officers testified against the other officer, mm-hmm. Cagle, who's been now convicted. He could get up to 5 years for what he was convicted of. What are you going to say, John Bullock?
No, so there are a couple things that come out of there, particularly to Luke's comments. Part of it is the difficulty in policing the police, especially as it relates to civilian versus internal investigations, but also officers testifying against each other. So there's that one issue. There's also the issue of timeliness, right? So again, you mentioned the time that it takes not only for the investigation to happen, but then also to get back to some of those witnesses who are forthcoming with information. And so what we also see is that breach of trust, because now they're saying, well, look, I came with information. I was willing to do this, but nobody contacted me. Then my word is discredited. And so, again, you have that fracture between communities and the police. But it's also interesting looking at this investigation and looking at the Department of Justice, because now, on the heels of Freddie Gray, you have the Department of Justice looking into what's happening to the police department. It's likely you're going to see a consent decree. It's going to have a whole bunch of things that the city has to do, the police department, to actually repair itself. And honestly, some of those reforms are welcome from some parts of the police department that would actually like to be able to root out some of the folks who are doing this, but it's largely systemic. So again, the word taking of officers, but also the need to have a civilian review board, having civilians or citizens in the room when some of these decisions are being made and the investigation is going forward. That would do a lot to repair the trust between communities and police.
Lisa, before we hit the phones here.
I wrote down many of the same.
Go right ahead. What did you write down?
The same stats that you wrote, you just named, like the 4% that were upheld. It just, to me, reading that, it legitimized a lot of what you already hear from activists. You already hear from, you know, Black people just standing around talking about observations. So it kind of, it legitimizes it. And I hope it puts us at kind of like a starting point. Like, okay, how can we begin the process of fixing this? Another thing about that piece specifically that in the way that it ties in my brain back to the Corinne Gaines story, they talk about the gentleman Abdul Salam, mm-hmm.
who was on the show, by the way, and talked about what happened to him in his alley behind his house as he pulled in with his young son. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So again, there's a little boy, and I think there's something there. There's a lot of intangibles when it comes to racism and maybe even unconscious racism. And I just think that's a thread that, like, young children there aren't respected. Like, these are kids that are seeing this. Like, Abdul Salam's son saw him pulled over. And, you know, Corinne Gaines' little boy saw.
And was shot.
Was shot and saw his mother killed. And I think that those are things that I don't know when we're fixing it. I don't know how we address it, but it needs to be addressed.
And as I think one of our early callers, Ernest, said, there are ways police can lob things in to disable people. But it could also be dangerous when there's a kid in the house to do that. But that it was an option there. And that's the whole question of whether or not you need police to arrest people for not showing up for traffic court is another issue. In my life, especially when I was younger, I had lots of traffic violations. I mean, tons of them. I was always doing something wrong. But I've never had anybody come to my door and say, we're going to take you in because, oh, you forgot to come to pay your parking ticket or your speeding ticket, whatever that was. You know, they pull you over and you deal with it. As one cop pulled me over and looked at me and said, oh, your taillight's out. You know, you remind me of my uncle, and let me go.
Yeah.
Actually, taillight out's not even a ticket, right? It's a work order.
It's a work order.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've also been pulled over for my taillight out. But, you know, I'm a small person. I'm a female. I think sometimes it's easier to kind of let me go because I'm not as threatening, maybe. But getting back to that case, one more point that I kind of was thinking about when I was reading it was there was a lot of quotes from police saying, you know, we want people to come forward. We want people to report these things because we can't follow through if people don't follow through. And it made me think about a hearing that I went to, a meeting a little while ago, and it was the Baltimore City Police Department now has a GTBQ liaison. And so he met with a lot of representatives from that community, and he was saying the same thing. We want people to come forward and talk, and we need like you to follow through once you make these reports, you know, saying, and they're telling them, we can't. We're afraid to follow through. We're still being harassed. These police officers know us. Like, they see us standing on the bus stop or walking down the street. And so that's like one of the walls that police are going to have to break if they're going to be able to make reformed, because people aren't going to follow through if we feel like, number one, nothing's going to be done, but number two, like, these police, while this process is happening, are still on the streets and can still kind of stop people and do whatever.
Let me open the phones again here. 410-319-8888. Let us go to Beverly. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Beverly.
I listen to you every day, but it's the same old song. Mm-mm. Nothing is going to change. But people should have read that article on what happened out there at Carriage Hill Apartments in Randerstown. The reason the police went there was because he had taken her steel tags off and put a sign on her tags saying radical things about the police. You know, he hated the police. And you can't hate the police. We couldn't even come out our door if there weren't police. Yes, there are some bad police, but there are good police. And if you don't mess with the police, they don't mess with you. So my thing is, people send the wrong message. There are good boys out here doing good things in life, but you don't up them up. But people doing bad things, we really talk about it. You know, they're still out here taking your car from you, robbing older people, crime on older people. You know, we got to look at that. The girl had a problem. She did. She had issues, and her family knew it. I read an article on it.
Mm-hmm.
She really had issues. She hated the police, and you can't hate the police. We need them. We do.
Now, Beverly, you raised a really important issue. Let's talk about this for a minute, what Beverly just raised here. I mean, and I appreciate the call. And I think that because all of us, I think human beings have a tendency to kind of make things linear and simplistic when nothing is mm-hmm. linear and simplistic. And there was a debate that took place. I think City Paper covered it, and I was aware of it at the Urban League Convention, where there was a back and forth with former Mayor Kurt Schmoke, now president of the University of Baltimore, and another one of your city council nominees and others.
Yeah, I wrote that.
You wrote that. Okay, there you go, Lisa. I knew the city paper. but that was part of the crux to the argument there.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that as she was
speaking. So go ahead.
I wish I could remember his name. It was Chris.
Chris Burnett.
Chris Burnett, who's running. Right.
He was kind of just talking about, in general, you know, getting black issues addressed. And he said, you know, a lot of times that younger people are so used to communicating online and Twitter and all those things that you have to get out and door knock. So he said when he's door knocking, he kind of realized he was a little bit more woke than or progressive than some of his constituents or would be desired constituents, because he was running up a lot of especially older people who said, yeah, we need the police. I'm worried about not having a drug dealer on my corner, which is a very extremely legitimate concern. And he said, you know, in my mind, we need the police, but there are also other ways to target crime. And not everyone's aware of that, and kind of opening that up. So that's when the former mayor said, you know, what he said about
that black working women the ones who pull the vote, and you have to respond to that.
Yes.
Because they're the ones who make the election.
He said that. And then he also said he felt like that what police injustices aren't a big problem. The big or not as big a problem, but the biggest problem is black on black crime. And that started a whole discussion.
So let me ask you. I mean, because this is your district has the same issues, and I remember in the 1990s when these debates were taking place here on the Steiner Show, which is around the time that Clinton decided to do this kind of the mass incarceration began, because people were saying you got to protect our neighborhoods from all the crime on the corner. That was a huge issue. It still is. So how do you respond to that if you? As a hopeful politician here,
absolutely. Number one thing you won't hear me say is black on black. We don't get into that. But here's the deal, right? Sometimes we get in this conversation has to be either or. It's both and, right? Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, you know, Chris's district borders my hopeful district. And so as we knock on doors, we do talk to folks who say, hey, look, I have drug deals. I have this crime that's going on right in my neighborhood. I don't feel safe. You have people who are saying we need more police on the streets, right? Then you have those who are saying, hey, well, the interactions have been somewhat negative. They're both true. Right. Mm-hmm. So that means you have to address the issues of inadequate education and schooling and unemployment. You have to deal with those issues. Mass incarceration. You have to deal with that as well. I mean, I grew up during the crack era. Right. And so you think about streets you couldn't walk down or all the kinds of problems and thinking about, you know, wars over drug territory and shootings. I happen to be in the 9th district. The 9th district has the greatest preponderance of poverty, of addiction. We have the highest percentage of people coming back from prison. We have all those things going on right there. And then you also have a critical block of people are seniors who feel under threat. Both of those things are true. Mm-hmm. And so it's not an either or proposition. And yes, it is true that people who look like each other tend to have the most conflict with each other. And then whether it's assault or murder or what have you, those things happen within groups. But looking at Baltimore, looking at other cities, we see these problems, especially where I am in West Baltimore. So it's both and. You can't divorce either one.
Let me go to the phone unless you want to jump in.
Sure. Just two quick points. Yeah, I've noticed when I do interviews out in various neighborhoods in Baltimore, that there's usually a divide among age, and that the older residents really want the police around. And they always have problems with young people dealing drugs or riding dirt bikes or breaking into homes. That is true. Those are the voters. And so Kurt Schmoke may have been making a very practical political point, even if it was not necessarily a popular one. And the other thing is, I think there's been a growing consensus since the Clinton era law enforcement tactics that you can't police your way out of crime anymore, and that the police can suppress crime, they can move it, they can lock people up for a certain period of time. But the real fixes have nothing to do with the police. They have to do with economic uplift and basically getting people out of poverty. So that's the police cannot, by definition, fix that.
I don't know the exact number. I would like to find out the exact number. But, you know, there have been in the last 17 years, let's say, 17 years? No, more like 26 years. Think about 1993. There have been thousands of black men in the city who have been murdered. Thousands.
Yes.
And four or five times that amount who have been shot. Mm. And
I think last year we had almost 1,000 shootings in Baltimore. It was like 900
and
something.
You know, a young 15-year-old boy was just shot in the basketball court just yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think that but the question is, how do you address that? When Clayton Guyton, who's been on the show numerous times, I will open the phones right here. Clayton Guyton from Rose Street said that the shootings and muggings taking place in his community are lowered because he runs a halfway house. And those men not only get up at 4 in the morning and clean the streets of that neighborhood on Ashland Avenue so it's spotless, but they walk the streets and they talk to people and they help people who have issues and trying to keep dampen down the crime. And he said in his neighborhood, and Clayton said that old women can walk down the street with their purses and nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. There are other ways of dealing with this rather than the police arresting people is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But it does have to be addressed, though. You just can't let it happen because you can't allow hundreds of thousands of people in Baltimore City to live in an anarchic situation.
Right.
It's unfair to people.
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. But you don't have to lock another 10,000 black men up and put them away in jail to make that happen.
But one of the things you just mentioned, though, it speaks to, and I think from a community development, community organizing point of view, the role of the community. That whether it's us having eyes on the street, communicating with our neighbors, seeing something, saying something, mentoring young people, stepping in when we see something happening. You know, people, wind up getting killed in East and West Baltimore, not because the police aren't there, right? People say, well, if the police were there, this killing wouldn't happen. Well, again, there are some things that are deeply, flawed within our community. We think about wages. We think about education. We think about all those ways of lifting people out of poverty and then also out of this mass incarceration. So there's some deeper issues. But also the community and the home has to be a part of it. Unfortunately, we have so many things over generations that destabilize homes and communities and neighborhoods.
Let me open the phone here.
4103. Namely the drug war.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah,
and minimum wage is another big issue that helps alleviate that because people have money in their pockets. Mm-hmm. If you have a couple making,
right.
Even if both of them are making $15 an hour, that's like $64,000 a year for a family. People can begin to think about how to survive and grow if they actually have that money to get out of poverty. Mm-hmm. These are important issues that people like President Young need to deal with. 410-319-8888. Let me go back to phones here and let's Sabor, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Very well. Good morning.
I was thinking about the one young lady that they pulled over a traffic ticket and they wound up killing her in Texas.
All right.
Okay, that's one issue. And another thing is that it's like they're not going to respect because of the way that their police is have been treating for some blacks. I'm not saying all, but I'm just saying some. The blacks are getting to the point now that they're going to be armed. And I come up in an era. Well, first of all, let me say this. I was incarcerated. I've been out now about 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When they said you couldn't vote, I voted anyway. And they before they even knew, I was voting.
I hear you. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, because some two Caucasians came up to me and say, do you want to sign? So I signed it, and I voted. And this for multiple years, way before that. I made a difference. I feed the people at least once or twice, a year, food on the streets. What we have to do is they have to come back, take back the community. The police is one thing. And matter of fact, the police is the one that went and got my people in slavery, okay? It's a lot. We are the majority. That's one thing. A lot of times people don't do their research. But like the guy, I don't know who that's there, that you, the politician or whatever. The thing is, if you take the bars off the corners, if you start back like the Operation Champ, I mean, you're familiar with the Operation Champ, where they used to come in the community and they bring the bands and get these artists. They might not spend the money anyway to come in and do some free shows and feed the people and bring back. Because if you don't, what's in the city is going to leak out into the county. And I know the difference in the county versus the city. I'm here, I'm living whatever, in Cockeysville, but now I'm in Joppa.
Yep.
And I noticed that. I know Joppa, Maryland. And now, I noticed that in the county, they're doing this, but in the city, they're just ignoring it. But if you mistreat a people, eventually it's going to come back. And not all officers are not bad. I don't need officers of security. We need to come back. Because some of these people, they have a lot of hypocrisy, punctuality. And you're looking at them like, okay, they see that they're selling drugs, and they're not doing nothing. And we have to take back the community. We have to be police ourselves. I don't need police. And then we get to the point now that the blacks are going to say, well, look, they're going to have their own arms. You watch what I tell you. You watch what I say to you. You think that thing that kicked off at Baltimore, you know, with Freddie Gregg, it's going to get worse. It's just like a man having a being in a good relationship and being in a bad relationship, and then he meets someone and then he takes it out on her. He's like, this is a good woman, but you're not used to having a good man. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, brother. And I'm only jumping in because we got to get another caller in here before the top of the hour, which you said is very...
Thank you for your time.
No, I appreciate your time and you're calling in. I appreciate you bucking the law and voting, too. So,
absolutely.
So, I do. 410-319-8888, because denying a human being a right to vote in society is just incorrect, and I'm glad we passed that law. I'm glad you were voting. 410-319-8888. Keisha, you're on the air.
I just wanted to say, because I'm a Baltimore resident all my life, several weeks ago we had a situation in Pikesville where a gentleman held himself inside of a house. Police had to shut down the shopping center, so a whole shopping center lost money for all day.
Yeah.
Okay, this went on for several hours. And then later on in the day, when we could go back home, you know, this man, he got out unscathed, unharmed. Every time a police officer hurts someone, kills someone, it's one of us. And they're never held accountable. And true, we do have a lot of crime in the city. It's a lot of our people that are doing a lot of things. Yes, but I also see the police officers sit and watch and see just what I see and won't do anything. And truth be told, a lot of them are on the payroll. You understand what I'm saying?
I hear you.
So when I say they're on the payroll, I've seen them on Garrison Boulevard where there's prostitution at night. And I've seen the black vehicles pull up, and they're talking to the girls and letting them go, you know, not doing anything. I've seen them in the hood, if you want to call it, with these people, and stuff are happening, and they're sitting in the cars on the phone. They're sitting over in the parking lot of 7-Eleven eating donuts or just sitting around. When a police officer kills us, hurts us, nothing ever happens. This white guy that they shot, you know, it was wrong. But you have someone facing time for injuring him when we have fathers that are killed every day and no one is even brought to justice. When we have films that see that the person is unarmed, that the person has their hands up, that the person is selling cigarettes and he's shot down like a dirty dog and nothing is done about it. And nothing will ever be done about it because nobody cares about us. So we have to start coming together and sticking up for our own people and police ourselves. Because before all of this, back in the 70s, we might not have had a lot, but we had a family unit. And we don't have a family unit anymore.
Keisha, I deeply appreciate what you contributed to the conversation here today. So one of the things I thought about, you know, as we look at this, both as journalists and as a burgeoning young political figure in our community, I mean, so in the 4 or 5 minutes we have left here, it seems to me there's got to be a way to approach this and push this. Because a lot of people don't agree with is what being said on this program.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't agree that this is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that bridge has to be made if we're going to have any headway in dealing with the things that Keisha and Sabor just raised to us.
Right. I mean, just the last two callers, I mean, you know, I wouldn't really add or take anything away from some of the things they mentioned. I mean, you think about some of these programs back in the day where you had police officers engaging with communities in a positive way. So you talk about Operation Champ. You think about, you know, Police Athletic League and other ways that you're interacting and building community. That's what, you know, that's what real community policing is, that you develop relationships such that every person you see isn't necessarily a target. Give you one example from someone who's in the district that I look forward to representing. Person talked about doing something. They're operating a recreation center. And he said that the officer who would be on the constantly on the beat would never get out of their car, would just stand there and just seemed like they were, you know, shook, if you will, right? And that things would have been much better if they were able to then talk and have that communication. Then we also look at bringing attention to these issues. One of the great things, you think about journalists, I look around this room, right, and you see folks of different colors, backgrounds, and all that. I think that's a big key to it, because even though it may not seem like an issue in some communities, when there are those who speak up and are allies, it makes a big difference. When it gets on the national stage, international stage, it's very important. Now, I also feel deeply feel the concern the lady just mentioned, because honestly, people thought that having things on video would then make all the difference in the world.
Right.
But the fact that now these things have actually been documented, but in many cases hasn't resulted in any change, is also very scary.
Yeah.
Lisa, and then we'll close out here.
Sure.
Ooh, you used to said a lot. I do want to touch on what you said about, you know, kind of diverse voices, because you asked, you said, you know, there's a lot of people who don't agree with what we're saying. All I can do is write. And I think I'm in I wrestle a lot with me as a journalist and me as a Black woman. And the Black woman part always wins out because I have Black children and a Black family. So all I can do is write what I know. I can write facts and I can write things that are as true as I can see them at. So that's what I can do.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
It made me think of a piece I read in the New York Times, the front page, where they were talking about how do we cover Trump if we think Trump's a mad, horrible for the country? What do I do as a journalist? Go ahead.
The caller mentioned selling cigarettes, referring to Eric Garner. And that brought up something to my mind the Dallas police chief said, which was we're asking the police to do too much. And if you look at so many of these cases, you have the serving of a minor warrant, stopping someone from selling a Lucy cigarette, stopping someone from selling CDs without a license. Very, very minor things that perhaps could be handled by code enforcement or something else.
Why not handled at all, maybe.
Or maybe shouldn't be illegal, right? So you have these are some of the questions that I think people are asking when we see the police going and turning what are may not even be crimes or shouldn't be crimes in escalating into these very negative and fatal interactions. And so maybe it's time for some of our lawmakers to look at what is the role of police in society.
I agree completely. I mean, and I do thank all of you. This was really a great conversation.
Thank you.
The three of you together. I really enjoyed this a lot. And I think our listeners did too. The phone banks were full, so that's a good sign for these kind of conversations. And I just close, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, everybody sold Lucy's. That's how you were able to buy your cigarettes. You bought a pack, you sold them for a nickel. Then you could buy another pack.
Being an entrepreneur, right?
That's right. So come on. Yeah. They're going to arrest people for that? Yeah. Give me a break. So same with CDs. Right? I saw my CD collection on the streets. Does that make me a criminal? Anyhow, I'm going to thank the three of you so much. Lisa Snowden-McRae, writer and associate editor of the City Paper, and Luke Broadwater for the Baltimore Sun. Both of you doing incredible work. Always good to have you on the air. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson, who is running to be a city councilman in the 9th District. Good to have you here. We'll have you back and look forward to hearing the voices of the men and women who are seeking to represent us and what they feel and think. Good to have you here as well,
John.
Take a short break and come back. It's time to take a look at this national election. Don't go away.